So there's a spectrum of requirements that these enterprises have, and live with a few customers now in India, and we're clearly making a difference to them. And we're trying to kind of be in the home turf with the knowledge of what we've been able to accomplish across the globe. We're really trying to scale up and focus and play our part, I would say, in the growth of digital transactions and commerce is what I would say.
Hello and a warm welcome to a very special podcast series, Unusual Suspects. I'm your host, Gaurav Chaudhary. This is a series about unraveling stories of entrepreneurs, investors, professionals who are disruptors, yet not in your face. Their disruptions have consistently delivered on the purpose and the mission they've embarked on. Their values are as strong as the mission. While they're ruthless in pursuing their ambition, they don't stray from being leaders who are not just admired for the vision and relentless pursuit, but also for how they're building an ecosystem of believers who consistently push the boundaries. In each episode, I speak to one such leader, talking to her or him or them about their businesses, lives, inspirations, interests, challenges, pivot moments, and turning points, successes, failures, and of course, the little joys and agonies and ecstasies of life and work. It is as much about their personal life stories, as much about their entrepreneurial, professional, and philanthropic journeys. Unusual Suspects streams on earshot.in, spotify.com, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, which is now YouTube Podcasts, moneycontrol.com, and a host of other podcast streaming platforms and directories. For this episode, I'm delighted to have Srinivas Nidugondi, who is the Chief Operating Officer and Executive Vice President of Comviva's FinTech Business Unit. He has over 26 years of experience in the financial services, payments, and commerce industries, and currently leads a team that provides financial solutions to over 130 global banks, financial institutions, and telcos, benefiting more than 1 billion consumers and processing over $250 billion of payment flows annually. Srini is passionate about technology for good and real development. Srini joins us for this conversation at an important time for India's digital payment system. The country's instant payment system, Unified Payments Interface, or UPI, is the world's leading real-time payments system now. There are talks about internationalizing the UPI system, making frictionless cross-border payments a possibility. To shed light on how Comviva is at the forefront of the digital payments revolution shaping India and the world, it's my delight to welcome Srini onto the show. Delighted to have you, Srini.
Thank you very much for the introduction, Gaurav, and happy to be part of this conversation.
Yeah. You know, Srini, let's start off with something UPI, talking about UPI, which has now perhaps become India's biggest fintech exports to the world. It has brought about a transformation that is not just transactional, that is not just financial. It's in many ways, it's also behavioral. Because from being a predominantly cash-preferred country and society, we are now moving towards, if I may say so, a very UPI-preferred society. And the digital landscape has seen some explosive growth, with UPI now processing more than 13, close to 14 billion transactions monthly, and digital payments expected to exceed 130 billion transactions by the end of this year. What do you see as the key drivers behind this rapid adoption? What is driving this adoption? And how is India's payments ecosystem evolving to serve both urban and rural consumers?
Absolutely, Gaurav. Being involved in the IMPS evolution way back in 2011, I never realized that we would kind of see such an explosive growth that India happens to be the largest country in terms of digital payments usage by volumes, so much so it's now told that it exceeds the volumes of China and the US put together, and that's some achievement is what I would say. I think every explosive growth or a revolution, as people would call it, ends up needing an anchor use case or a point in time, and I guess for us it was the demonetization to start off with a few years back. Then, of course, COVID happened. And I think all of us were perforce needed to look at various options. And what we now see is that it's the adoption to, and adaptability as well to change by folks across the spectrum is what I would say. That's one. The second, I think, interesting thing which we also probably need to look at is how the telecom and the digital infrastructure has grown. So everybody has a mobile phone now. The penetration is one of the highest in the world in India. And people started using like fish to water, different apps. So I think the understanding of digital has kind of increased. So I think it's been so-called a perfect storm that kind of happened. And so be transferring to one's own family, friends, or now buying for your goods and services has clearly become such as what you've just mentioned, UPI first, that I think nobody can think of any other way of looking at payments in the country is what I would say, Gaurav.
You know, Srini, let's talk a bit about embedded finance, which is now becoming a transformative trend in India. You know, platforms like Swiggy and Amazon and Ola and even telecom operators integrating payments and lending directly into their user experiences. It's embedded finance is clearly now a mainstream UX. How do you see embedded payments systems changing the way the Indian consumers interact with financial services? Do you see some kind of a pattern emerging there? And what sectors stand to benefit the most from this shift?
I think from the normal payments, the whole concept of embedded payments and probably even embedded finance is about saying, A, how is it invisible in the overall journey that one is making, be it a commerce transaction or looking for a service, etc. And how do we facilitate that experience? So what I keep calling payments, not anything else, but payments as an experience and hopefully finance as an experience. And that's where the embeddedness really comes in. The first part, of course, as you've talked about, the Swiggy and Amazon or telecom operator or any other digital enterprise for that matter, ensuring that the flow is seamless, doesn't realize the customer that is, doesn't really have to realize that they have to kind of click, etc. And look at the option saying that depending on use case, the payment preference may be different. How do we really bring it upfront for the consumer that intuitively that's what one would have chosen? For example, you know, it could be a meal pass as coming up first on Swiggy, but maybe my credit card when I'm going to an Amazon, or a direct debit when I'm going to pay for my bill from through a UPI transaction when I'm paying for my bill. So the ability to kind of present that one for the consumer just makes it that much more seamless. And of course, when we're kind of talking about embedded finance and not just payments, the aspect of saying that, hey, when do I kind of nudge in a very responsible way, of course, is saying that does this person need, let's say, a small bit of a loan so to ensure that the transaction is complete. So that whole journey, I think, is where one is seeing so many different aspects coming into the country because, as I said, experience of what you've just mentioned about the UX, I think, is of the foremost importance now so that customers really enjoy doing their overall transactions.
You know, Srini, let's change tack a bit. And despite the dominance of digital payments in terms of transaction volume, cash, however, remains resilient in many parts of India and continues to be a preferred mode despite the deep penetration of UPI. This is particularly true of semi-urban and rural regions. What are the challenges? Why do you think people still prefer cash over UPI or digital payments? What, are there any challenges for achieving deeper digital payment penetration? And related to it is how can fintech providers and policymakers plug these gaps?
Absolutely. But before I probably get into the cash part, one data point which still amazes me, Gaurav, is when I look at the way the UPI transactions and of course, the overall digital payments have kind of grown in the country. You know, we're talking about tens of billions of transactions now. In July, The UPI transactions were a little upwards of 19 billion. And just in January, there were 16. So imagine the growth that we're seeing in such a short span of time. And it seems to be relentless. We're talking about something like $300+ billion of payments that have happened on UPI. That's something like 25 lakh crores. That's an astounding number. Having said that, to what you've just mentioned, unfortunately, cash is still prevalent in the country. But as a percentage of GDP, I think we are now at around 11-odd percent. The cash circulation in the economy is down from a few years back, 4-5 years back, at around 15% to 11%. So the good news is the percentage-wise, it's dropping. Having said that, the absolute number is for sure increasing significantly because, mind you, the Indian economy is growing quite robustly. So probably $1 trillion of GDP now to close to $4 trillion. So 4 percentage points dip still translates to a significant absolute number. And I think it kind of is for multiple reasons. First, the touch and feel aspect, I think, is still there. While we may go to a remote destination and pay for our tea through UPI, but in many other places, the touch and feel is something that people still prefer. So the mindset shift is required, is what I would say. That's point one. Point two, infrastructurally, I think we've come a long distance, but in certain places, the networks may not be efficient enough, etc. And that's where I think there's a bit of a work required, is what I would say. Third, of course, is also, and if you've realized and read some news articles recently, some vendors have stopped taking UPI or accepting UPI payments because there was a slap of a GST payment coming in. And so here is where I would say the government, because the finance minister has said that UPI is not going to be costed for and it's for the general good, it's a public good of sorts, then there has to be a slight delicate trading of paths here so that we don't stop folks who are trying to come to the organized financial services fold. They slowly come back, go back to the cash economy. So I think it needs a bit of a thinking. I'm not saying people shouldn't pay taxes, but how is this handled is something that is important. So that's the third area I believe one would need to kind of look at. And the final one, while that numbers are coming down, because as I mentioned earlier, the country in general is becoming digital first. However, there is still a set of population which would need to be educated so that it becomes easier for them to kind of handle these transactions. And the aspect about security, because there's still a belief that these channels are not secure, digital is not secure. So that aspect has to be looked at. And that's where probably the fintech players, by the way, the RBI is doing a great job in public service education is what I would say. But the fintech players and the overall financial service participants would need to do a bit more on this front is what I would say.
Srini, you know, there is the rise of embedded lending. And also, we now see a lot happening in the micro lending space in India, particularly with formats like BNPL, Buy Now, Pay Later. How do you see the future of credit and micro-lending evolving in India? What role will fintechs play in this? And how is it actually ending up promoting financial inclusion and, importantly, responsible lending practices? Srini?
Absolutely. So if one were to look at lending, India is estimated to kind of have a need of around $2 trillion. So that's a lot of need. And upwards of 70%. Is unfortunately still in the unorganized sector. So one of the reasons why we see, including recently, I'm told Flipkart's got an NBFC license, a lot of people are trying to kind of get into that space because of the unmet need. While India has come up the curve significantly, is what I would say, in the overall credit bureau, credit ratings, etc. But for small ticket needs, is there a different way to look at scoring, looking at past history of buying, etc. And that's where aspects like buy now, pay later, etc., slowly emerging. There's been a bit of a blip after all the hype. Having said that, I think as long as the e-commerce players tie up with participants who kind of offer BNPL as one thought process, I think people who kind of need money and can repay soon should be nudged. But what you've just mentioned about responsibility, I think that's important. We shouldn't get to a stage of pushing people to start taking on these loans and start defaulting. Of course, the credit rating would kind of anyways get affected. Having said that, it's important that consumers are kind of told to kind of be a little more clear on what they're buying. And that's what I would believe that the fintech players have to kind of really look at. The more we kind of go along with the journey of these consumers, there's going to be enough opportunity to kind of lend as and when required and not overdo it is what I would say. So that's one part of it. And I believe what I was mentioning earlier, the embedded financial thought process, coming out with specific offers, specific loan thought process, I think would clearly be there. The second part we kind of probably tend to miss out is the overall SME side of it. That's also digital. And I do know that the government also has been looking at a lot of options there to ensure, again, if you were to take the food example, because we talked about Swiggy a little while back, how do we look at the small restaurants getting funding, the working capital requirements, etc. So I do know that Oken from iSpert, one of the standards that's kind of really coming out, and also the account aggregator thought process from RBI and other regulators, if those can also be kind of brought in here so that, again, nudging them in a way to ensure that their needs are met and their businesses kind of grow, especially for the SME sector. Because I genuinely believe that the overall SME industry, if it grows robustly, they would end up contributing significantly to the growth of GDP as well.
Srini, how is Comviva driving change in India as well as global digital payments and embedded finance space? And can you share some specific examples of how your solutions are making digital transactions more secure, inclusive, and accessible for both urban and rural consumers, Srini?
Absolutely. We're quite proud of what we've been able to achieve through our platforms on the digital payments and commerce front, Gaurav. So you had mentioned about $250 billion. I think the world's also going through a significant pace. Actually, we now process over $400 billion of money throughput through our platforms across. And right from the financially excluded, so folks who never had a bank account, thankfully in India, through the government push, we have a significant population which is already banked. But across the globe, there are enough countries where people did not even or do not have a bank account. And we've been working with players, the fintechs, the telecom companies to ensure that that gap is bridged. So that's one area where we've really been focusing on. And I believe we made a significant change. If we were to look at the UN SDG objectives, I think we've played some part to it across is what I would believe. Having said that, I believe the other part that we've been focusing on, especially in the context of India, is the overall embedded payments and fintech and payments, the finance space is what I would say. And there, you know, we're looking at two thought processes, trying to look at the overall growth of the digital first economy. So significant digital enterprises wanting to look at various payment needs and how could we address them with what I've just mentioned earlier about what I call the payments as an experience. So the ability to accept payments itself in the multiple payment gateways, the payment success rates per se are not very high if you were to look at one gateway because of various reasons. How do we help our customers increase the success rate by 5-6 percentage points? And that clearly translates into revenue certainty or, for that matter, revenue increase. And that's one part of it. Second, how do we ensure there's a good customer user experience, irrespective of the payment method, be it a credit card, debit card, a meal pass, a UPI, etc. How do we ensure that there's a good user experience? How do we help them operationally in the reconciliation thought process, etc.? So that's one part. The second part, in terms of the customer-facing thought process, how do we help them manage different wallets, be it the gifting wallet, be it the refund wallets, etc.? Or should the digital enterprise want to look at issuing cards? So there's a spectrum of requirements that these enterprises have. And, you know, we are live with a few customers now in India, and we're clearly making a difference to them. And we're trying to kind of being the home turf with the knowledge of what we've been able to accomplish across the globe. We're really trying to scale up and focus and play our part, I would say, in the growth of digital transactions and commerce is what I would say, Gaurav.
Finally, Srini, you know, let's talk about artificial intelligence a bit. You know, AI is rapidly transforming digital finance. This is particularly visible in the hyper-personalized experiences, automating processes, and also, very importantly for consumers, it's also enhancing fraud detection. How is Comviva leveraging AI and machine learning within your digital payment and embedded finance solutions to deliver more secure, efficient, and tailored financial services for Indian consumers and businesses? Srini?
Absolutely. As an organization, I think now we call ourselves AI first, and not just as a slogan, but I would say walking the talk. So all our products now are what I call AI infused. So if you were to look at the digital payments and commerce, the two, three areas where AI could really make a difference. The first, of course, is the customer experience. The N equals one, while it's sometimes told to be a myth, it can happen because these models, the AI models would learn of how one is behaving, etc. And therefore present that interface to the consumer, which would really make sense. And by the way, the customer behavior also changes. So how does the model change with the behavior is what we're working with. So that's one area where we are significantly focusing on. The second one I'd mentioned about, for example, ensuring better success rates. I could always put in rules, but if the AI model comes in, it will keep learning basis, the evolution, and things are so dynamic. So that's where we believe AI-based engine could really help bring in a betterment in success of transactions, etc. So that's the second area that we are really looking at the AI thought process. Third, clearly, is the fraud security and the operational stability. We tend to underestimate this or because it's in the back end and it's not really visible. But I believe they're extremely important to ensure that the platforms are always running. Can the AI-based operations detect proactively, you know, if there's going to be an issue on the platform, and then not only detect, but look at self-healing capabilities. And that's what we kind of, our platforms are now enabled with. So that's one. Second, fraud is a very important aspect. Once it's money, there's value, there's always going to be fraud. How can we look at different areas to figure out if there's any transaction that's not appropriate? How can we flag it up? So that's where the AI models would kind of be coming in. And of course, the overall security, kind of looking at, while we kind of build in with the right software development practices, figuring out other abnormalities, if I may, and detecting them, I think is where we're kind of building in the AI. So overall, different areas, AI would clearly is and will be making a big difference. And our focus is to ensure that we leverage all of these capabilities to ensure our customers get the right value.
Thank you, Srini. Indeed, very well said. Thank you so much for taking the time out and dropping by to have this conversation with us and sharing your deep insights and perspective. Thank you so much.
Really appreciate it. It was wonderful speaking with you.